Good morning. Welcome to the Kadamba Center. So if you will turn to page 183 in the prayer book, 183, you see a mantra toward the bottom between two lines on page 183. And so that's Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra. So let's chant that three times. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Now, if you please turn to page 34. Toward the middle of the page, you see the four immeasurables. So let's read that one time in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now to turn to page 37, and on the bottom of the page you see two mantras, Chenrezig's mantra, Green Tara's mantra. And so while we're chanting those mantras, the first one eight, second one seven times, let's think of the people on their prayer list, and also Geshe Sangpo, he is experiencing some really strong winds and rain from the super typhoon in Asia. So let's also keep him in mind, and also, of course, Geshe-la, who's also in transit somewhere. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Tare tu tare tu re soha. Om 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 tare tu tare tu re soha. Now the children are welcome to go to their classes. If they've never been to a class, would you please accompany your child and find out where to pick your child up?
Any mom will be ready. Sorry, I'm a little slow. Yes.
I've never met her, but that is.
Well, it's a wild day here at the Kadampa. We have the UN here. And so, hello, good morning, I'm Jill Marie. We have just one little brief thing we're going to do before we start the presentation. And Susan Potter is going to introduce a very special person to our center. So if you've ever circumambulated the stupa or driven around it or seen it, we want to introduce you just one more time, the artist, John Pell. So Susan's going to make a presentation, very brief one, and then we'll continue on with these guys. We have to coax them along a little. Would you like me to hold this for you?
Hey, everybody. Good morning. I'm Susan Potter, and this is John Pell, his nickname. His more formal name is Juala Lama. And so John Pell came to Raleigh about 4 years ago to build the stupa. Is there a quick show of hands of people who have started coming to the center and the stupa was already here? I really think quite a few people, because it was an ordeal for us. John Pell was telling me this morning that the first 6 months were meetings. He was in Boston before he came here to build the stupa at Kurukula. It took 9 months. I said, how come it took us 2 years when the one there was 9 months? And he said, 6 months of meetings before we ever got off the ground. So that's sort of what's... But in addition to the stupa that John Pell was largely responsible for, with the assistance of quite a few members, but the construction, the painting, the and then of course the stupa, why it is so holy is it's filled with holy objects that Kadam Center purchased and people donated, so it's very precious. He also paints tankas, and so a tanka like this, John Pell has painted dozens of for people who have bought them over the years that he's been here, painting in his spare time. He works at the Whole Foods Bakery in Morrisville, and then he paints anywhere from 4 to 6 hours a night in our garage, which was not ever designed as an art studio. So, but this is what he's been working on for the past several months. And this is a Samantabra. I'm not clear on the pronunciation. Tanka that really has eight deities around the Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, and this is a protection tanka. And I really didn't know this until this morning. This was commissioned by one of our very generous center members for Rinpoche. So he is going to, I don't know how you're going to get it out to Rinpoche, but that's the next challenge. This is going to be delivered to Rinpoche, I guess in California.
Or maybe India. Or
in India?
Yeah, I think maybe
India.
And so it...
Lama Zopa, people don't know who you're referring to.
Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is the spiritual director for the organization that Kadampa Center is a member of. And he's been to our center a few times. And it's always a wonderful occasion when he comes. He asked us to initiate this series of five retreats, the Light of the Path retreat, of which three have occurred so far. So there are two more to look forward to. So when you hear about the Light of the Path, immediately put it on your calendar for whenever it's going to happen. Rinpoche has seen sort of iterations of this through the technology of mobile phones and has... done some editing or tweaking on some of the colors and things. So he's been very involved in the painting of this. So it's quite a an accomplishment. So we're extremely proud that John Pell is in our presence. And he is in our presence for a little bit longer because his family is coming from Nepal. John Pell's been here for almost the last 5 years. And he's lived with several of us. He's been with Richard and me at our house for the last 3 years almost. His wife, Sonam, and three boys, Sangye, Naitu, and Song Serwang, 15, 10, and 4 and a half, are on the plane now, or will be. They're getting here tomorrow at 5. So it has been at least 3 years of immigration lawyers, papers going back and forth, phone calls. It's been quite an ordeal. And we're not sure whether the earthquake in Nepal, they live in Kathmandu, we're not sure whether the earthquake brought the attention of the State Department to a head, and they said, yes, let's go ahead and move some of these people up the paperwork chain. So anyway, the earthquake was devastating. John Pell went back for a month to help his parents rebuild their house in a small village. He has some video of that on his phone if you'd like to see it. We're going to move the painting out to the lobby if anybody would like to look at it. I'll put the card which explains about the protection offered through this gorgeous work. And so anybody can take a look at it and really rejoice in it. We're having a welcome party at the Tibetan restaurant on Chatham Street Tuesday night. They're getting here tomorrow. We're having a welcome party. So if anybody would like to come by, and you could order at the Tibetan restaurant. What? Would you hold that, John Paul? Thank you. So what? I can get it now. Okay. So this is a kitchen item in the typical Tibetan kitchen. I know a number of people here who've been coming to the center for a long time know it's a momo maker. And so it's for making steamed dumplings, which is a staple in Nepal and Tibet. And so John Pell already has a momo maker. He's been at our house using our kitchen and our things for the last few years. And so what he doesn't have is a broom, a kitchen garbage pail, or any bags. He doesn't have a can opener. He doesn't have any glasses. He could use some pillowcases. People, you get the idea. So people have already been bringing some things over to our house. We would love to share with you if you have some gently used items or if you'd like to purchase a gift card and help make the transition for the three boys in Sonam. John Pell's been here for a few years. He has transitioned. But to help make the transition a little smoother, that would be so appreciated. They are moving into an apartment, a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment at Sumter Square, and so it's going to be a wonderful situation for them. But we could use whatever support our community can offer. So this is John Pell. He'll be out in the lobby afterwards. We're going to go ahead and take this out right now. Thank you so much.
Can you
do tonkas for people after? We've made our garage available for him to come back over anytime. So yes, he'll start. So he has a little easel back there, and he'll start painting. Yes, ma'am.
Susan, has the double bed been donated yet?
You have a double bed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We have beds for everybody.
Well,
there are other things, too. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so multitasking. So this next segment is something very special that we're going to embark upon. So when I first started position as center manager, I talked to a lot of people about what they've been doing through the years. I've seen faces all around here, and you'd actually be shocked at how many hours people are working behind the scenes just to make this place operate and run. It's been very surprising and very moving, and the whole process has been marvelous. So one of the first people I talked to was Barb. Raise your hand. And I didn't know a thing about the prison project, so I would like to see another show of hands. Do you even know we have a prison project? Who doesn't know we have a prison project here? Okay, a few people. Who feels like they don't really know anything about it, what they do? Okay, good. That's why we're here. So as she was talking to me about it, I just said, you tell me what you do. That's all this is about. Tell me what you do. The look on this woman's face is why she's here right now, because it was so joyful. It was so beautiful. I was moved. As all of you know, I'm always moved to tears. So I'm going to keep it together this morning. So I just said, I've got a great idea. Bring this to the Kadampa Center. Immediately went to Robbie the next day. So that was day two, my post. Day three, Robbie approved it. Day four, Donna approved it, and it was on the schedule because those two got together and made it happen. We'll call that compassion in action. That's happening. So that's all I want to say about it, and I want Barb to do the rest and just take it over. Thank you.
Do you guys need this microphone? Is this? Yep. Oh, hello.
Okay, so I'm Barb Baranski. I've been coming to the center since 2003 and did a lot of different things over the years. But a couple of years ago, I switched jobs so I had more flexibility during the day so I could participate in the prison project. And this gentleman right here, Herb Cunningham, started the project about 20 years ago by... He had a request from somebody to bring some meditation classes into the prison, and so he started just kind of organically doing that kind of stuff. And I'll let him tell a little bit. We got the other mic? Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about how it started? It's on.
It's on. Okay. Yep. This was about 1990. Is Don here? No.
Nope.
Is this thing working?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Kadampa Center really didn't exist at the time. I think this was before the basement. So this was about 92, maybe. And we had three or four members who met regularly. And somebody at Central Prison asked Don, who was known in the community for being a meditator, in the medical community anyway, and said they wanted to come over and teach a class in meditation at Central when he was working and I had a flexible schedule. So I was tapped, since there was only, like I say, probably four members altogether. And that started out, we had a class for inmates, and then later the psychological staff got a hold of it, and we had a class for them, and away we went. Politics reared its head, and that got shut down two or three years later, but some of the inmates that were in the class got moved to different prisons, and they wrote and said, why don't you come here? So we went to Caledonia, and then later on, other members, the Kadampa started growing a little bit, and we started adding more people and so on and so forth, and here we are today.
Cool. Thank you, Herb. And, you know, it's pretty incredible that we've been doing this for so long, and a lot of it is because of the Kadampa Center. You know, if the Kadampa Center didn't exist, if Don hadn't, you know, been out in the community as a meditator, we probably wouldn't have been able to get this rolling. So, you know, and we wanted to let you know, the Kadampa Center supports this project. So we buy books and do some different things for, mostly books for the classes. But everybody sitting up here is a volunteer for the prison project in some capacity, and there's a couple more out in the audience that couldn't fit up front who do a variety of things. But I'll introduce them as we go through our little program. But just to let you know, why would somebody want to go into a prison? And as a Buddhist, why would we want to go into a prison? And it's mostly because of our belief that we need to be compassionate to everyone. You know, there's folks out there in some of the other organizations, and they want to save souls and all this kind of stuff. But we're there because we have a belief that everybody deserves to be happy, no matter what mistakes they've made, what they've done, the harm they've done to others, whatever. I mean, they still are deserving of our compassion and a chance at improving their own mind so that they could have a little bit of happiness, even if it's only in their head. And the other piece is, you know, we're all kind of in our own prisons. I know everybody up here who goes into the prisons or is pen pal with somebody in prison will tell you that we learn so much from these guys and gals that we write to and work with in the classes. We've had some incredible discussions on forgiveness. I mean, just imagine what it's like to have the conversation about forgiveness with somebody who's killed somebody and to watch them work through the process of trying to figure out how to forgive themselves, how to get the other person or the family of the person they might have killed to forgive them. I mean, just working through these processes. I mean, you know how hard it is amongst ourselves to deal with forgiveness for the little things. But these guys are dealing with some really big things, and they carry this heavy, heavy burden. And, you know, it's an awesome thing to watch them make it way through it. And to give you a little context for what we're dealing with, the Kanapa Center Prison Project, we deal with mostly state of North Carolina. We have gone up into Virginia to a prison, but for the most part we're within the Department of Public Safety in North Carolina. So we deal mostly with them. So we don't deal with the jail population. We're talking just the prison population right now. That's a whole nother. Jails are a whole other thing. So right now there's over 37,500 people currently incarcerated in North Carolina. Just over 33,000 of them are adult men, 1,700 are male juveniles, 2,700 are adult women. They don't say anything about juvenile women. I'm not really sure why. Maybe they end up with the adult women.
22?
Okay. David says there's 22. So each month, approximately 2,000 people are admitted to prison, about 1,500 adult men, just over 200 male juveniles, and almost 250 adult women. In 2014, 23,128 individuals were put in prison. Each month, about 100 fewer are released, so our prison population is increasing a little bit. So in 2014, just under 23,000 individuals were released from prison. So that's one of the important points here. A lot of folks think that once somebody's in prison, you know, oh, they're in prison, we're never going to have to deal with them again. Most of these folks get out at some point. There are some lifers, but for the most part, some of them, they're going to be back, and they're going to be back in your community. They're going to be serving your food. They're going to be cutting your grass. You know, they're going to be out in the community trying to make a living, trying to make a life for themselves. After they've served their time. And there's a lot of issues that happen there we'll talk about a little bit later. There are 70 prisons in North Carolina. There used to be over 100. There was one in every county, and they're slowly whittling that down. They're closing some of the older prisons. They're closing some of the newer prisons, which is kind of weird, but that's the Department of Public Safety. Cost per day for somebody to be in minimum security is about $65, which is about $23,000 a year for to house somebody in minimum security. In medium security, it's about $76 a day or $28,000 a year. Close custody, which is like central prison, the places where it's really locked down, it's about $88 a day or $32,000 a year. So it costs a lot of money. And, you know, you think about that, that's 33,000 or 38,000 people at, you know, nearly $30,000 a year. That's a lot of money to house folks. And you think about it, you know, $32,000 in a year, how many colleges could you go to for $32,000 a year? You know, you couldn't necessarily go to Duke, but you could probably go to just about any place else. You could also get a decent education at Wake Tech. You could feed your family. You could do a lot of things with the $32,000. So the racial mix is 57% black, 35% white, 2% American Indian, less than 1% Asian, and 6% other, which we're thinking is probably Hispanic population or something like that. It's an interesting, we were trying to figure out what other actually meant and the statistics I was finding. But if you think about it, I think the breakdown of the population, normal population in North Carolina is about 13% black. So 57% of the inmates are black. So the stuff you're hearing about the disparities in race is actually really happening. Most frequent crimes are drug possession, 18%, assault, 11%, which we think, since murder's not on this list, we think that assault probably includes murder, which is kind of strange. 11% larceny, 10% DWI, 10% breaking and entering, 6% traffic violations, 6% robbery, 4% sexual assault offense, 4% fraud, and 3% drug trafficking. So the big one is drug possession, holdover from the 1980s and the war on drugs. Education level, 1% claim that they've gotten less than a sixth grade education, but when they test them, 34% actually have gotten less than a sixth grade education. 6 to 12, 75% claim that they've gotten that education, but really only 45% test. And then the people that have actually graduated from high school, it's pretty consistent. 24% claim that they graduated from high school or got some college, and 20% tested at that level. So for the most part, a lot of the folks that are in prison are have a low level of education. A lot of them get their GED while they're in. The experience that we've had with some of these folks, a lot of them grew up in very unstable environments. They have, you know, unstable families, few father figures, mothers struggling with their own issues, often addiction, abuse. We've been talking to a couple of women at women's prison, helping them on the mentoring process on the way out, and both of them were sexually and physically abused as children, and they got into bad habits. They have, you know, children, and one has a four-year-old. She's been in prison for 5 years. One left a six-month-old when she went into prison. You know, there's a lot of history of not such a good environment when they're growing up. A lot of them live in Section 8 or low-income housing or unstable housing. A lot of them got in trouble before they were 18. Drugs and alcohol are often a factor. There's a lot of peer pressure, a lot of lack of hope. You know, they think the only thing that they can do is, you know, continue with the path that their brothers and their friends and the neighborhood are going on rather than trying to work their way out of it. And some of these folks, we meet a bunch of folks that have been in prison since they were 17. We've got one fellow in one of our classes. He's probably, I'm guessing, 35. He's been in prison since he was 17. He's very uncomfortable with women because he's never had an adult relationship with anybody. You know, he basically was really immature when he went in. He doesn't know how to deal with people. What is, you know, what is going to happen to this fellow when he finally gets out? He's going to be totally dysfunctional out in the world unless he gets some help. So that's kind of a little overview, and now we're going to show you a little bit about what we do. First thing we're going to do is do a little class. Stephen Killian, he goes with me to Caledonia every Tuesday. We drive an hour and 45 minutes both directions to go out to Caledonia and Halifax County, and we lead a two-hour meditation class. So Stephen, me, David here, and Amanda, and we have another fellow from the Shambhala Center who's joined us. His name is George, that goes with us right now. So we do that every week. So we're going to simulate a little class, and you guys can participate. So you're on.
All right. Well, welcome, inmates. glad you all were able to make it. I'm surprised Ms. Scholler has let this many of us in the room. Just be warned, it gets kind of hot up here. I hope the window unit holds out for the next 2 hours. We're just going to start our class with a brief focusing meditation. Those of you who hadn't attended our classes before, just watch the people who have been in class and you'll catch on pretty quickly. So if you could get in your comfortable meditating position. Feet flat on the floor. I've been told it's important to keep your back very straight. Head up, hands in your lap or comfortably positioned, and just focus on your breath. Breathing in and out. Count your breath up to 10, and then count back down. If you hear a noise in the hallway, it's not important. You're safe in this room. And just focus on your breath for a few minutes. Now think a little bit about why you've come up here. What do you want to accomplish in the next couple of hours? We've been reading an awesome book. We've done a little homework. And we're going to have a discussion on ways to have a calm mind and to control yourself so that you have a happier life. And the people around you are a little bit happier. bring your attention back to the room.
So, Andre, where's Jacob?
Schedule change, so he's not able to make it.
Couldn't make it up here? Yeah. So is John coming?
Oh, man, he got put in a hole.
Okay. Where's Tim?
Oh, he got shook.
Anybody know where Mr. P is? Not here? All right, that's a surprise. Okay. All right, well, Dave, it's your class.
Okay, let's go to the book. Does anyone want to volunteer to read chapter 87? Good, thank you.
Thoroughly process. Understanding how our emotions have the power to run us around in circles helps us discover how we increase our pain, how we increase our confusion.
Helps us discover how we increase our pain, how we increase our confusion, how we cause harm to ourselves. Because we have basic goodness, basic wisdom, basic intelligence, we can stop harming ourselves and harming others. Because of mindfulness, we see things when they arise. Because of our understanding, we don't buy into the chain reaction that makes things grow from minute to expansive. We leave things minute. They don't keep expanding into World War III or domestic violence. It all comes through learning to pause for just a moment and not doing the same thing again and again out of impulse. Simply to pause instead of immediately filling up the space transforms us. By waiting, we begin to connect with the fundamental restlessness as well as the fundamental spaciousness. The result is that we cease to cause harm. We begin to know ourselves thoroughly and to respect ourselves and others. Anything can come up. Anything can walk into our house. We can find a dinosaur sitting in our living room couch, and we don't freak out. We have been thoroughly processed by coming to know ourselves with honest, gentle mindfulness.
Thanks, Kurt. Now let's turn to our homework, which I'm sure everyone's done. Who wants to volunteer to read their answer?
Okay, so discussion question 87. Because of mindfulness, we see things when they arise. Because of our understanding, we don't buy into chain reactions that make things grow from minute to expansive. We leave things minute. They don't keep expanding into World War III or domestic violence. This describes a two-step process. One, we see things when they arise, and two, we leave things minute. Think of an example when you have let things get out of hand. How could seeing the problem as it arose help you control your mind so that things don't grow from minute to expansive? How can you become better at seeing things as they arise and practice this two-step process more consistently? What makes it difficult? I was playing 3-on-3 basketball, and the guy I was checking had a high dose of bad sportsmanship. I'll admit that I'm not that swell on defense, but this guy kept sneaking shots on me. So I did the same. But I realized that eventually this would just escalate to us fighting, so I defended someone else. I knew that if I stuck with this guy on the defense, I'm just adding more fuel to a fire that was already lit. Instead of letting it consume the either of us, I went and threw cold water on the fire. I'm sure he was committed in letting that fire burn. I played out the scenarios. I had to humble myself. In the end, I got the end I was seeking by preventing a fire going out of control.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I can very much relate to that game of basketball that you were talking about. Let's move on to chapter 90. Does anyone else want to read that? Thank you, Hermann.
Chapter 90 is on-the-spot equanimity. An on-the-spot equanimity practice is to walk down the street with the intention of staying as awake as possible to whomever we meet. This is training in being emotionally honest with ourselves and becoming more available to others. As we pass people, we simply notice whether we open up or shut down. We notice if we feel attraction, aversion, or indifference without adding anything extra like self-judgment. We might feel compassion towards someone who looks depressed or cheered up by someone who's smiling to himself. We might feel fear and aversion for another person without even knowing why. Noticing where we open up and where we shut down without praise or blame is the basis of our practice. Practicing this way for even one block of a city street can be an eye-opener. We can take the practice even further by using what comes up as the basis for empathy and understanding. Our own closed feelings like fear or revulsion thus become an opportunity to remember that others also get caught this way. Our open states like friendliness and delight can connect us very personally with the people that we pass on the street. Either way, we are stretching our heart.
Thank you very much, Amanda. And for the homework for that question? No, no one's done the homework.
We haven't done the homework.
Well, I guess I could share my...
Do you want to do the homework?
Practice on-the-spot equanimity for 10 minutes in some place where you encounter lots of different people. Describe what you have learned from your practice. I went to the weightlifting area of the yard for this practice. It wasn't a lot of people there, probably close to 12 to 15 at any given time. For 10 minutes, I observed the people around me. None of them were paying me no mind, even though I'm right in the middle of them. I observed these. One, an individual was engrossed in his workout, but I can sense he's not enjoying any moment of it, that he's forcing himself. Another individual is into his workout. He's methodical, disciplined, and is enjoying every moment. There were others that were out there just to be out there. Quite a few had no motivation. One in particular caught my attention immediately. In between workouts, he would talk to himself, not loud, but under his breath. Later, I asked him about that, and he said he would talk to himself to stay calm. And that's it.
Thank you very much.
Awesome job, Dave. Does anybody else have anything to add? Anybody else do their homework? Right. Angelito, you did great.
Thank you.
All right, well, we're about out of time. So if we could focus, let's do a brief closing meditation. Think about why you came here. Be grateful for Dave for being willing to lead the class and Angelito for doing the homework. And think about what you've accomplished for the last 2 hours. Nothing's gone wrong. Nobody's hurt you. You haven't irritated anybody else. So that's good. Let's take what you learned out in the prison and make it a better place for you, for the people around you, for everybody else, and go change the world.
So that's an example, a very brief example. This is what we do over the course of 2 hours. So a lot of the discussions are a bit longer and a bit more in-depth, but what Ashley actually read was homework responses from one of the guys that we've watched an incredible change over the last 2 years, I would say. So that's kind of how some of our classes go. Some of them are a little different. Andre likes to talk a little bit more at his. Andre and Sylvia go to Andre, Sylvia and Amanda go to Nash. Andre's been taking a break for a little bit, so Amanda El-Jahuri's been helping. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the other piece. So this is all about the workshops and classes that we lead in prison. So this is kind of an example of what we do. And at Caledonia, we usually have anywhere from like 5 to 10 to 15 people, depending upon work and stuff. A lot of the guys work in the cannery, and they don't get out in time or something. They have other things to do. So the other piece, another big piece of our program is a pen pal program. And Amanda Henry over on the edge there is leading the effort of hooking people up with pen pals, or not hooking people up, all right, that's not the right term. That's one of those old Thanks, terms Barb. That I just can't get rid of. Connecting people with pen pals. And she and a couple other folks are going to read some expert excerpts from the letter and talk a little bit about their experience as a pen pal. A lot of folks get a little concerned with, you know, oh, I don't know how to be a pen pal. They're going to ask me hard questions, all that kind of stuff. I think hopefully she'll be able to clear some of that up for you. So, Amanda.
Hi. Okay, so I help connect people with pen pals. I've been doing the Prison Project since 2014. I've been a pen pal since probably about a year ago after a retreat we did at Nash. And it's amazing. Everybody who's a pen pal will tell you that it's one of the most rewarding experiences that you could possibly have. It's completely different than speaking in class, because I also go to the Caledonia class. But with pen pals, it's a little bit more private. We get people who are able to express themselves to us that they can't, things they can't tell anybody else, or, you know, they feel like they really trust us with things they can't really express to other people. And most of the time, I have about 6 pen pals now. Most of the time, they're not really heavy Buddhist questions. Mostly, I get questions like, oh, how can I use forgiveness on, you know, this guy who cut in front of me in line in the chow hall? Or, oh, I did really well. I didn't, you know, get angry at, you know, this guy who was ripping me off, like, in cards or something. And really, they're very, very proud of how they can use very small and very simple techniques. So I don't really get a lot of questions, and I don't know if anybody else really does. I don't really get a lot of ritual questions or really any very, like, structured Buddhist questions, but mostly how can I use this to improve my situation, or, oh, I'm discovering that I don't have to react. I'm discovering I don't have to be hard all the time, which is really an amazing thing. And Ashley and I, Ashley and I have some excerpts from some of our pen pal letters. We have so many. Oh my goodness. I think I have about 100. Oh my gosh. I have about 100 in boxes we were looking through. But we have a couple excerpts from our pen pal letters. So I'm going to let her read some first, and then I have some to read, and then we'll share those.
I have 4 pen pals now. And Angelito is actually my first pen pal from when I first got started doing the pen pal project. So I'm going to read from his, because I have so many letters that it was no way for me to, like, read back through all of them to pick some really good ones to read for you guys. So this was actually the intro letter that he wrote me. And so it says, Ashley, I'd like to start this letter off by saying I appreciate that you are willing to take the time to correspond with me. I hope that this journey we call life has been kind to you. As for me, I'm getting by. A little about myself. I'm 33 years old. I was born in Manila, Philippines. I've been in the U.S. since I was 7 years old. I've been in prison since 2001. I've always had an interest in Buddhism, but I've never really studied it because the other prisons I've been to didn't provide the services or material. When I was out there, honestly, Buddhism hardly crossed my mind. It wasn't until I came to prison that I started having an interest in Buddhism. Would you mind telling me about yourself? Are you a practicing Buddhist? I hope to receive a letter from you soon. Please take care. Angelito. So that was my first, like, intro from him. Let's see here. So I'm just going to read a couple snippets from other letters because I don't want to take up too much time reading full letters. So I tried to pick out some just some good feedback that I got for him that also kind of shows, like, how in just, like, a short amount of time, like, just from us writing letters, the work that he did and the differences that he's made since he's been there. All right. Thank you for the letter that I received from you. After reading it, I felt nothing but pure gratitude, and you made the rest of my day just a little bit easier. I was having a hectic morning at work, and when I came back to my bunk during lunch break, it was when your letter was expecting me. I've always known about Buddhism, but just never had the spark that would have interested me. I started coming to meditation class here earlier this year. This is my second session with Barb, Steve, and Amanda. I am looking forward to your teachings, and I'm eager to learn. In your letter you wrote, and I quote, "Through my personal studies of Buddhism, learning mindfulness and awareness in my daily life has forever changed my life," end quote. Can we start there? I want to learn from you. I want to gain knowledge from your experience. Just like so many others, I am flawed. Don't get me wrong. I'm not expecting that what you teach me will make me perfect, impenetrable to the chaos, cruelty that society and others harbor. Just like you, I want to maintain a sense of inner peace, what you consider self-compassion. This is a privilege that I ask you to grant me. I want to maintain a sense of inner peace, self-compassion on a daily basis, not just in times of distress and turmoil. I hope this will able me to lead by example so that others in here can be inspired by my actions. I'm a firm believer that actions speak louder than words. I'm thinking about practicing Buddhism, and I hope I can count on you to be my teacher. Will you please let me be your willful student? I hope what I'm asking will not be a burden to you. I hope that what I'm asking I can succeed in. I think I will. When you appeal to the highest level of thinking, you get the highest level of performance. That's one of my favorite sayings. I'm up to the challenge. Well, Ashley, I'll go ahead and end this letter. I look forward to your next letter. May you and yours be safe this Halloween weekend and the days to come. Until then, take care, always. And then I'm going to skip, and this is my last little excerpt from Angelito. And this one I picked out because it was like a direct him taking things that we talked about in letters and really putting it into action in there. A couple of days ago, I showed compassion to another, but chose not to show compassion also to another. They both live in my block. The one I showed compassion is not a friend or even an acquaintance. The same with the other. The reason why I showed compassion to one is because we've never had any problems with each other, and this individual seemed like a stand-up guy. The other is not a stand-up guy. I thought about this, and I pondered and pondered, and I meditated. When the opportunity came to the other individual, I opened up my mind and my heart and showed compassion. The feeling I felt was the same I felt when I showed compassion to the first individual. It felt good. I thought back to how I felt when I chose not to show compassion to the second individual and regret. I don't like that feeling, but I imposed it upon myself. Me and this particular individual here have never seen each other eye to eye, but the expression on his face was priceless. And the last thing I'm going to read is actually, this is from another one of my pen pals that I share with Andre. He kind of wrote like a, what do we call it, like a kind of a review of like how he feels about the prison project, the pen pal project. I would like to thank Kadampa Center for creating the pen pal project. I have been incarcerated for a while and have corresponded with a member of the pen pal project since 2010 and still correspond today. Recently, I've gotten a new pen pal from the pen pal project. It has been much to my benefit because all of the correspondences between my two pen pals, Andre and Ashley, that I have learned about the teachings, meditations, and have found a new way of living even behind these walls. The love and compassion showed by the members has made the difference in my life. Therefore, having the pen pal project in place for those incarcerated such as myself gives courage to change and be a better human being. Please continue to make a difference. Peace and happiness. That's it.
So if anyone's interested in becoming a pen pal, you can let myself or Barb know. All of the letters come to the center. The return address is in the center. We have the Prison Project mailbox, so that's for personal privacy. You can use a pseudonym. I get questions like that all the time. You don't have to use your real name. You just have to let us know what name you're using so we know what letters you're getting. We assign pen pals all the time. We have so many guys who would like to correspond with people. And, you know, all of us, I think, have multiple pen pals. Ashley has 4. I have 6. Andre, I know you have several. We all have multiple pen pals, so if anybody would like to help us out with that, if you're interested, any questions you have, let us know. We'll be happy to help. Barb or myself, we answer all those questions all the time, and we'd love to have you be pen pals. I have just a couple really short excerpts from some of mine. The first one I'm going to read is from Xavier, who was in Andre's class at Nash after attending a retreat that Barb, Stephen, and Andre and I did in September of last year. So he just said, thank you for uplifting me with your letters. They definitely bring me comfort and peace. I know we've been pen pals a very short time, but I feel I can trust you. You chose to write to me and be my friend when I'm at the lowest point in my life. In here, I'm out of sight, out of mind to so many people, so kindness is very rare to me. I don't open myself up much. In here, I've learned to put all types of shields up, but inside, I'm actually gentle and sincere and can be compassionate. In here, I have to put on a mask, but writing with you does so much because I can be normal and take the mask off, and that is an awesome feeling. That was one of the first letters I got from Xavier, who's been my pen pal for almost a year, and we write about weekly, I think. Another excerpt is from a fellow named James, who is also at Nash. He's at Nash County, and he wrote to me. This was in a letter I got about a month ago, and he said, you all help a lot of people with your prison project. If I wasn't cemented in my Muslim beliefs, I think you guys would have me be a Buddhist. Your hearts are so big, I don't doubt that any of you care. I can practically hear the caring when you all speak. Where I'm from and where I'm at, big hearts and caring aren't perceived as priority attributes to develop. You guys have shown me that it's okay to care. I mean, I've always cared, but it's okay now to show that I do, which was amazing. And then the last excerpt I'm going to read is also from Xavier. And he had sent me a letter probably about the second or third letter where he told me his whole life story and how he ended up in prison. And a small part of it, it was about a 10-page letter, which are amazing. I always love those. And so he wrote, after a few years in prison, I started searching for who I really was. I didn't like who I'd become, so I started working on bettering myself. You asked me why I was interested in the meditation retreat in the first place. I had heard about meditation, but didn't know what it was about. And I try to find ways to better myself every day. I constantly seek knowledge and ways to grow. I don't want to get high anymore. I don't want to be violent. I just want to enjoy my life. And I want to be free. I've had the odds stacked against me for a very long time, but I'm not giving up. Which was incredible. And then that's when he told me he was going to start going to Andre's class.
Thanks, Amanda and Ashley. Both of these guys, I know both of these guys, and Angelito is one that when we first met him, we came away from the class going, oh, my gosh, he's really scary. And, you know, he's a tough fella, and he puts on this incredibly tough exterior, but over the last couple of years that he's been in our class, he's turned into one of our star students. You know, he's really opened up, softened up, become, you know, much more human than he was those first couple of classes. We were like, oh my gosh, I would hate to meet him on the street, but now I wouldn't have a problem. But back then it was kind of tough. And, you know, being a pen pal, you know, some of Ashley's stuff sounded like, you know, they were talking more about Buddhism. More of Amanda's stuff was more about just how to live Buddhist or live principles. So that's what a lot of it is. And both of these people are voracious pen pals. You don't have to work that hard. You know, if you have one pen pal and you write once a month, just as long as you set the boundaries, you know, you set the expectation with the person that you're writing to say, hey, you know, let's plan on writing, you know, once a month or twice a month or something like that, just so that you get the expectations set. These guys, literally, they thrive on these letters. They, you know, they look forward to these things. So we don't want to disappoint them. So Amanda's, when a part of Amanda's and my job is to wrangle people. So, you know, if you can't be a pen pal anymore, you let us know so we can get somebody else. And if you run into an issue, we've had a couple of issues with some guys asking for money and stuff, which you're not supposed to do. We have guidelines that we give to the pen pals, and we have guidelines that we give to the guys and gals on the inside that we're writing to that spell out what is appropriate and what isn't. So if they violate the rules, we cut them off. That's all there is to it. This is not one of those dating service pen pal services, okay? There are a lot of those out there, but that's not what this is. This is purely to improve their lives from the practices that we like to put out there. So anyway, so you've gotten a good sense about some of the people that we interact with, but we've got some more examples here that will be interesting. Many of the folks that come to our classes are a little bit older. They're in their 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, they've been through the system a couple of times, or they've been in for a long, long time, and they're finally like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing with my life? So many of them, you know, we're based on Buddhist principles, but we have a lot of people, like James is a Muslim, and we've had Muslims, we've had Wiccans. You'd be amazed at how many warlocks there are in the prison. Rastafarians, Christians, and, you know, people of varying religious backgrounds that benefit from all of this. So some are lifers, some get out, some soon, some not so soon. So, Chris, you want to show the video, please? This is a video that Ashley found. Yes?
Yep. I'm wondering why there's a lot of women. Is this like a base?
A lot of women?
Yeah, the numbers.
In prison?
Yeah.
Well, there's only 3,500.
So, and the total was?
38,000. So there's about 33,000 men, and there's only 3,500 women.
Okay.
They get a lot more support and a lot more services, it seems. That's a feeling I'm getting. The women do. But
I missed a couple zeros. A
couple zeros, yeah. 3,500. It's a small population. I think there's 3 women's prisons in the state right now, and there's, you know, the other 67 are for males. So, Chris? Lights? Somebody hit the lights back there? For the past year, poet Clint Smith has been teaching a creative writing and poetry class at a Massachusetts prison.
I immediately recognize how deeply socialized I've been to think of these men in a very specific sort of way.
We don't remember that they are brothers.
So part of what writing does is it gives them the opportunity to push back against these sort of pejorative ideas and notions around who they are, and to do it for themselves, and to do it in a way that is reaffirming their own humanity. So much of the work they've gone on to write has been these deeply personal and vulnerable pieces of their lives, and talking about their fears and their hopes and their dreams, and wondering if their children still love them, wondering if their wives still care about them, wondering if, like, anybody from their life before they were incarcerated remembers that they exist. even though prison is this sort of ever-present part of their reality, it is not the sum of their reality.
This is the poem by somebody in prison.
The air is thick with ambivalence. The residue of those both forgotten and pushed away. A watchtower, too certain of its own authority. The slow grating of a mechanical door granting one passage in and out of the yard. The dull gray of clothing rendering light invisible against a backdrop of concrete walls. Barbed wire coils itself precariously around the edges of the prison. It can be difficult to tell what they are trying to keep in and what they are trying to keep out. Chain link fences standing upright as soldiers do. Only what they are told. Only what they have convinced themselves that they have been built for. But is anything built for what it ultimately becomes? Stripped of any agency it might have had when the steel was melded into a false deity, a pretense of human control. Did it dream of what else it could have been? The wheels on a child's first bicycle. The monkey bars from which they would swing to and fro. The car a family drives on a cross-country road trip filled with laughter and fighting and spilled ketchup across the floor. When did it learn it was to become a cage? But how can a cage become a refuge? A circle of men swallowed by the world's indifference, where the totality of their personhood has been diluted to a single act, that they have become singularly defined by the worst thing they've ever done. We don't remember that they are brothers, husbands, fathers, friends. We don't remember that they are people worth remembering. But their writing is a declaration of all that makes them whole. A classroom of men who refuse to forget themselves. Each word provides a sort of liberation a parole board can never grant. So often they write about their family, their children, how they want them to remember that their father is a man whose laugh could turn a room into a festival of rapture, how he would read them stories before they fell asleep to a world that didn't always make sense, but always made sense to them. It's the sort of thing that reminds them that they once existed beyond this world.
So I thought that was the sentiments in that often mirror the things that we hear in our meditation classes. I think the same thing, we get similar emotions out of the letters and the discussions that we have in the classes. So, about that. Yes. Yep. Herb's going to talk a little bit.
One thing, is this on? Yeah, okay. One thing that you have not really heard directly is what you get out of this. And that's really probably the biggest part. You develop a relationship with people who allow you to develop compassion to a level that you'll never get in a class, studying the tenets or the long list. One time when I was first a Buddhist, which was a pretty long time ago, we had a great master here who was the lineage holder of the Kala Chakra, Kirti Tenshap Rinpoche. And I asked him, I said, you know, we've had these initiations into medicine, Buddha, this and that. What's the best practice? And this is a man that spent 20-some years in solitary meditation, doing the very highest tantric practices and that sort of thing. And he grinned and he said through his translator, the best practice is to have a good heart. And prison work will do that for you probably more than any practice I've ever done.
Thanks, Herb. Andre? Yep.
Yeah, as we were going through this is, and watching this and everything, and I'm aware of everyone here, and maybe it's your first time hearing about this work and stuff like that. But what Herb said is absolutely right. And so what I'm thinking is that it's like what it's done for me, you know. When I say that it's not about me, I was joking, right? It's about me. it really is, you know. But in a good way. Because it's about me becoming a better person. I do my little diatribe, my talk with these guys before we get into the classes and stuff like that. Because the first thing I want them to know is that how I see them. I don't see them as prisoners. I don't see them as people who have murdered and raped and who have burgled or whatever it may be, whatever reason they're in there. What I see is their innate goodness. What I see is a human being who's trying so hard to be a good person. Always tried their entire lives to be good people. And this is what we don't get. The media will never show you this about those people. There's context. I tell them the only reason I can go in and out of those doors free will is not because I didn't make mistakes in my own life. Not because I was a Boy Scout and never made a mistake. I just never got caught for my crap. You know, bottom line, and you can call it karma. I had the karma to not get caught. And I am keenly aware of that. And I'm very sensitive to that. So when I go in, I realize that what I am doing is something that is noble. I sit here and when I first started studying Buddhism, I come to the Kadampa Center when we were in the basement and stuff like that, and I sit here and I was just filled with all this compassion. I just couldn't just sit with it. Right? I had to do something with it. And so Herb approached me about the prison project. And then my teacher, Venerable Rabina, she talked to me about the prison project. And then I knew I had an outlet. And so that's what I've been doing. The goal, as the Dalai Lama says, is to become a better human being. When you go in and do this work, whether pen pal, whether go in and do the grunt work, you know, like I do, and these guys do, or whether you make cushions, whatever you may do, right? The goal is to become a better human being. That's what we get out of it. I don't want anyone to miss that opportunity. You can do this. Some shape, form, or fashion. Everybody can do this. You know, because you will become a better human being as a result. I'm in this chair. These guys are my motivators. I will get out of this chair. I will walk. And I will continue to work with them. Yeah.
Thanks, Andre. So we're running out of time, so I think we're going to skip on to the next one. We had a couple other things. David's got some good stories about some youth folks, and we've got a speech that one of the guys in our class gave at the volunteer banquet this year about us that made us cry. But we'll put those up on the website. You can see them on the website. KadampaCenter.org/prison-project is where we're going to put some of the stuff, and there's going to be some stories and things. I want to get on to the last part of what we do, which is working with folks as they're getting out of prison. And we have an excellent example of somebody who's been very successful at this with Mr. Kurt Latimer over here. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about what it's like to transition out of prison into the real world afterwards. So you have 5 minutes, Mr. Latimer.
Excuse me if I seem a little nervous. The last time I was in a crowd of people, I told them to put their hands up. So, just to break the ice there. Back in 1993, I was an idiot.
We have Kleenex all around.
Well, I walked into a bank and tried to make a withdrawal, and it wasn't mine, so I done 20 years. It's these people right here, the reason that I am a success. Because you need to know that there's something out there for you. Because if you've lost anything, if you've lost everything, why is there to leave? You know, sit around and play cards and watch TV and go out to the yard and play baseball. There's no reason to leave. So, the work they do is so important. I've been out of prison for 28 months, and I went in with a skill, so naturally when I came out, I still had that skill. And that's the only thing that has saved me as far as getting a job. And I would be able to support myself and find my own place and provide my own car. But there are so many people that, and she was mentioning the TAN program, that's so important to go back in there and to speak to the individuals and say, listen, you know, you need to get your act together and you need to prepare. You need to find a place to live. You need to be looking for a job, not 2 weeks before you get out, 2 years before you get out. You know, you have one thing against you. You got the conviction. So you're one step behind everybody else. Amanda walks in for a job, she doesn't have a record. Would they trust me with the cash register? We don't know. So, yeah, they're kind tattoos. And, you know, they have spoke during the program about they seeing the change. And I noticed a change. I got involved in the group up in Butner. And I really started noticing a change in myself where I didn't react. You know, they say the only difference between humans and apes is our reaction to what happens to us. Are we reactionary or are we have the ability to think through process? And when we stop reacting, we start analyzing. And Herb said in a class one time, everything that is happening to us, we are projecting. And I started to consciously think about it. In the chow hall, when I'd get upset with the guy in front of me, he done something that I didn't agree with. And then I realized I walked in the chow hall with a negative attitude. So I was projecting my negative attitude on everybody around me. And when I quit doing it, I realized it was me, that it wasn't them. So I had to change myself. And I really appreciate what you've done.
Thank you, Kurt. So there's lots more stories, but what we do with, we work with the Department of Public Safety's Transitional Aftercare Network, which is part of the chaplaincy services at DPS, and they have a mentor program, so folks can ask within like 18 months of release, they can request a mentor, and then we go and do an assessment and talk to them and find out what kinds of support they need. A lot of the support they need is mostly just personal, like just somebody there to be their cheerleader, to say, yes, you can do this, yes, you can do this, or get them some housing resources, or, you know, get some attention to their caseworker and things like that. But the big thing that we want to emphasize with the folks getting out is that, you know, that relationship. Steve down here is Kurt's sponsor, and he was instrumental in helping Kurt get out and deal successfully with the world. So there's folks like that, and I think everybody will tell you that the relationship means so much, that having somebody to talk to about what's going on and all that kind of stuff. It's one thing to hand somebody a piece of paper with a list of homeless shelters on it, which is what often happens when people get out. If you don't have any support, or if you don't have any family when you get out of prison, they hand you $40 and a list of the homeless shelters. And Kurt told a story earlier about one time when he was out on work release, or out on leave with Steve. They went and served meals at the homeless shelter, and by golly, there were several people he was serving meals to that had just got out of prison that he knew from the inside. And he's like, wow, you know, how is this any different? You know? So, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep the people from ending up in the homeless shelters and giving them a leg up to help them get back into society, so that when they're living down the street from you, there's less of a chance that there's going to be any trouble. And the other thing to know, if you know of any employers who might be interested in doing stuff, if you hire somebody who's convicted of a felony, you can actually get bonded and insurance, so that if something happens, like they steal from you or something, you actually get money from the federal government, like an insurance policy, if something like that would happen. So tell your friends who are employers. Anyway, I appreciate you guys taking the time. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but these are the awesome bunch. It's Amanda Henry. That's Shanti. She started with Herb long, 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 long time ago. Kurt, Andre Smith, Ashley Williams, Steve Killian, Amanda El-Jahuri, David Bishop, who was supposed to, or not David Bishop, damn, I'm projecting, aren't I? David DeSouzaphone, that's what we call him. David D'Souza, who has this beautiful British accent and was going to read something for you, but you'll get that next time. David Maclis, Herb, Karen Mastriani, got a couple other people in the audience who participate, but if anybody's interested, let us know. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Barb and everyone. The Prison Project has a line item in our budget they use for buying books, and it's completely inadequate for what they want to do. If you want to support the Prison Project financially, checks made out to Gaddafi Center, earmarked for Gaddafi Prison Project, will go directly to them.
And we also have a donation form online under prison-project on the website. So if you want to give that way, that would be awesome, too. We spend a lot of money on books.
Yes.
So, you know. Yes, any questions? I didn't ask if there were any questions.
What are you using?
That is Comfortable with Uncertainty by Pema Chodron. It's a really nice, it's got 108 chapters. They're all about 2 pages long, so it works really well.
Were you able to get back into the central prison?
No. Herb goes and visits. Yes, Stephen.
Hilton Center
is in Central.
Has a presence in Central.
Okay.
On death row.
Yeah, and we've got we're partnering up with we've got one volunteer with us from Shambhala Center, and they've got some other volunteers who are helping with the Pen Pal program also. So we're working with them. And here's David.
I just want to mention, I know there was a lot of focus on men's, but Karen's doing a tremendous amount of work in the women's prison, and then I do the work in the youth facility, so it's 15, 16, and 17-year-olds. So it's all of our population is affected.
Yep. Yes.
Do the prisoners, the inmates who go to your classes, do they have to have proved that they... Do they have to have, you know, fewer infractions, or can anybody attend? Can any of the inmates attend, or do they have to have beyond, you know, perfect behavior? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question. It can be interesting. It can Herb can talk a little bit about it, but anybody can come, I believe, right?
Yeah, if you're under some kind of
I need to put,
is it okay? if you're under some kind of disciplinary practice, restrictions of activity or something, you can't come. But that would be the only case. And I would say, I've got a letter in my pocket from a guy who came to our class when I was still going to Caledonia, and he had 84 infractions for last year, so he was certainly not, and he wasn't restricted from going. He's one of our best students. I still write to him.
Yeah, they generally put out a call, like right when we get there, they say, you know, meditation class, and then whoever participates in the meditation class just comes up to the room. At Caledonia, we have a pretty strict handler, woman from the programs department, who, you know, she wants the class to be pretty consistent. So once you come, she doesn't like people to start after the first couple of classes while we're working on a set of things. So she'll kick some people out, and she has issues with some people because there's been some passing around of stuff back and forth and things. They don't really come to the class for the right reasons. But we can tell who those are really quick, and she usually takes care of them pretty quickly. But for the most part, I think everybody I know in our class is pretty sincere.
Yeah,
I have
new recruits at Nash because they thought they said medication.
So we call it anger management now and meditation class. But it's also not necessary that they become Buddhist either. I don't push that at all. In fact, I teach the way I teach is as a psychology. And I don't push a religious thing. Herb is coming now, as I understand, doing the Buddhist class, which is so they have that option. Many of them want to become Buddhist, but I tell them straight up, man, I don't really care what your faith is, or if you don't have a faith, you know, it makes no difference. Becoming a better human being, that's what it's all about. And you can and these practices. I guarantee you, I tell them I don't guarantee stuff much, but I guarantee you that if you practice this, you will become a better human being. Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you guys need to go, we're going over time, but if anybody has questions or want to stick around, we're happy to stick around and answer questions or talk a little bit more about some of the experiences folks are having. What? Steven.
I just wanted to jump in and say that we're one of the few supportive groups that don't want anything from the inmates. So all of the government officials are taking notes, and any interaction they have with that official, the counselor, the social worker, the caseworker, becomes part of the record. We're not in there taking notes. And then other volunteer organizations want something back from those inmates for their participation, some sort of commitment. We don't want anything from them. We're in there. They can come if they want. And they can take what's valuable, leave behind what's not, and we don't want anything back from them. And we are all here to say thank you, because you provide the base that gives us the credibility and allows us to go out and do this work in the prison. When we say we're from the Kadampa Center Prison Project, people take us seriously and let us in. If I showed up at the prison door knocking, hey, can I come in and talk to your guys? No. So you provide the base, the support that allows us to do this, and so we all want to say thank you to all of you for that.
Any other questions? All right. We're doing closing prayer. You want to do closing prayer? All right, I get to do this. Page number 246. So may all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May lower living creatures suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests.
May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those found be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, and as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
Thank you.